We have a, you know, the start of an amazing deal. We're going to denuke North Korea. It's going to start immediately.
President Trump speaks with VOA about his historic meeting with Kim Jong-un. It's Wednesday, June 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a former U.S. negotiator with North Korea shares summit observations. Investments flow into and from China. Interpreting cries from babies. Generating power from the sea. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un agreed in Singapore Tuesday to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula during a historic summit with U.S. President Donald Trump, who then unexpectedly said he was suspending military drills with South Korea. Kim's commitment to denuclearize was included in a document signed after the first-ever meeting between a sitting U.S. president and a North Korean leader. VOA spoke with President Trump immediately following the meeting as contributor Greta Van Susteren asked about his impressions of Kim Jong-un.
What surprised you today about Kim Jong-un?
Really, he's got a great personality. He's a, you know, funny guy. He's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator. He loves his people. Not that I'm surprised by that, but he loves his people. And I think that we have a, you know, the start of an amazing deal. We're going to denuke North Korea. It's going to start immediately, and a lot of other things are happening, including getting the remains back. You know, it's been, I know you've been so involved in so many ways in North Korea, but getting the remains back, Greta, is so important to so many people. They've called me, they've written me letters, please, can you do it? And he's agreed to do that. Thousands of people, so, you know, who died in the war. So that's a big deal.
So you put the human rights issue on the table today, and he reacted how?
Very well. I mean, we obviously were talking about the denuclearization 90% of the time, but we put a lot of other things, including human rights were mentioned. Getting the remains back were a big factor. In fact, we put it in the document. We're able to get that in the document. We got a lot of good things in that document. That was far beyond what anyone thought was going to happen.
Give me some sort of behind the scenes. Did you issue an ultimatum to him? Did he issue an ultimatum to you?
No,
what was the reaction to back and forth?
Not an ultimatum. We, you know, we've been dealing for 3 months, really, and we've been dealing through our various representatives, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who's done a really fantastic job. So we've been dealing for a pretty good period of time, and when we met today, we got along right from the beginning. You know, for me, it's this is hour number 25. I haven't been sleeping for 25 hours. It's been a big, long negotiation, and I'm very proud of it. It starts a process, you know, that could have ended up in a war, that could have ended up with many millions of people. You know North Korea very well. Seoul has 28 million people. That could have ended up with millions of people dead, and we're going to end up with a deal.
All right, what about our troops? Are they staying in South Korea?
Yeah, they're going to stay. We didn't even discuss that. That wasn't discussed. We are going to get out of the war games that cost so much money. You know, where we, because I think, number one, it's very provocative, and I want to do it, and I think they're very happy about it because it is so provocative, but it costs a fortune to do it, and we won't do that as long as we're negotiating in good faith.
What brought him to the table this time? Because, you know, there's been a lot of saber rattling back and forth over decades with the DPRK in the U.S.
Well, actually, I don't think there's been too much saber rattling prior to me. I don't think they basically had a silencio attitude, silence. They didn't want to talk about it, and you can't do that. And I think the initial rhetoric was very important, frankly, as much as I hated to do it and as much as some people thought I was doing the wrong thing. I think without that, we wouldn't be here. I also think that he really wants to make a deal. He wants to do something. Because he knows that we mean business. I don't think he felt that in the past. I think in the past it was, look, it was different people. It didn't work out. But he knows that we want to do business. We have to do business. And we will do business. And now we do have, it's been, you know, not a long time, but although you could say that from day one we've been talking about North Korea and in a very tough manner. But I think we signed a document today which was far, far greater and more comprehensive than people thought. Nobody thought this was possible.
What do you think he thought of you after he left?
I think he liked me, and I like him, and I understand the past. And, you know, nobody has to tell me he's a rough guy. He has to be a rough guy, or he has been a rough person. But we got along very well. He's smart. loves his people. He loves his country. He wants a lot of good things, and that's why he's doing this.
But he's starved them. He's been brutal to them. He still loves his people.
Look, he's doing what he's seen done. I mean, if you look at it, but I really have to go by today and by yesterday and by a couple of weeks ago, because that's really when this whole thing started. Again, without the rhetoric and without the sanctions were very important. The sanctions are going to remain on until such time as we see, you know, this is going to happen. And we pretty much see that now, but the sanctions will remain on until we really start dismantling or dismantle the nuclear weapons.
Because this is Voice America, it will be heard in North Korea by the citizens of DPRK of North Korea. What do you want to say directly to the citizens of North Korea?
Well, I think you have somebody that has a great feeling for them. He wants to do right by them. And we got along really well. We had a great chemistry. You understand how I feel about chemistry. It's very important. I mean, I know people where there is no chemistry. No matter what you do, it just don't have it. We had it right from the beginning. I talked about that. And I think great things are going to happen for North Korea.
Mr. President, nice to see you all the way from Washington.
That's true. It's been a long time. At some point, I'll be able to go to sleep, I think, you know, get a little rest.
Indeed. Have a safe trip back, sir. Thank you, sir.
It's a great honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
U.S. President Donald Trump speaking with VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren. You can see the interview on VOA Asia Facebook as well as our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. Trump to VOA, we're going to denuke North Korea. For South Koreans, joy and concern at Trump-Kim summit. United States opens new de facto embassy in Taiwan, angering China. Protesters heckle and disrupt Duterte's Independence Day speech. Malaysian press await promised reforms. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. While the document signed by President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un did not lay out specifics regarding denuclearization, Trump said at a news conference, "We're starting that process very quickly." He stressed existing U.S. sanctions will remain in place until North Korean nuclear weapons are, quote, no longer a factor. Bill Richardson is the former governor of New Mexico and a U.N. ambassador who has dealt directly with North Korea in the past. He shares his summit observations with VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
My overall impression is positive on the diplomacy side, on the two leaders getting to know each other, the personal connection, positive in starting a normalization process of the two countries and a reduction of tension. But mixed and concerning that no substance came through. The North Koreans didn't give up anything. The concern I have is that no detailed verification, hardly any discussion about North Korea reducing their nuclear and missile arsenal, nothing on the peace treaty, not enough on human rights, in my view. I was pleased that the issue of the remains came up by the president, the remains of American soldiers, some 5,000 from the Korean War being returned home. I brought back seven in the year 2007. But overall, good on the tone and the diplomacy and the vibrations, weak on the substance and verification.
Is that enough for an initial meeting in your view?
It's okay. It depends on two things. One, the president has to follow up himself on the results of this meeting. He can't just walk away and leave it to his staff. And secondly, there has to be a very organized message, an organized negotiation, hopefully led by Secretary Pompeo and not other messengers in the administration. I hope they establish working groups on nuclear issues, on missile issues, on human rights, on normalization of relations, on remains, get technical people on the ground in North Korea, in the United States, North Koreans, Americans negotiating, bring in the South Koreans in some of these discussions, bring in the Japanese, certainly, bring in the Chinese, and find ways to make this a regional effort, not just a U.S.-North Korean effort.
How surprised are you that the U.S. did not consult with South Korea, apparently did not consult with South Korea before this started?
Well, this is of enormous concern. It shows that we have to get our act together. The fact that the South Koreans did not know that we were suspending military exercises with them is a failure of diplomacy, of consultation. It's common courtesy, especially since South Korea has been so helpful in brokering the U.S.-North Korea summit, and it affects their security. I think some of those military exercises can be changed, perhaps reduced, but not suspended altogether. You want good readiness here. You want the troops and our joint efforts to work. You want to reduce tensions, but this is typical North Korean. They always want you to make the first move, and then they say they will do something, but they never say yes or no. So we made the first move, the concession, and now the North Koreans, you know, are going home without making a specific concession themselves. Nonetheless, it's still a good start, a process of negotiation. I want the president and the United States to succeed, but I worry that we didn't get enough meat on the bones in this initial discussion on denuclearization and missile technology and the threat to the region, especially to South Korea and Japan.
VOA Asia returns in a moment with more on the Trump-Kim summit with former Governor Bill Richardson. Happening now in Asia, major leaders across Asia and the world mostly voiced approval for Tuesday's agreement between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to push toward ending Pyongyang's nuclear weapons program, even as South Korea and others adopted a more cautious stance. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. We continue now with our conversation with former Governor Bill Richardson, who is asked by VOA's Ira Melman about human rights concerns and where this process goes next with Kim Jong-un.
Does this leave open the possibility of another situation that Bill Clinton and other U.S. presidents have faced where promises were made and never realized?
Yes, that's the possibility. Especially if we don't have verification and international inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency, and North Korea does not disclose where they have their nuclear and missile sites. They need to produce an inventory, and they need to allow unfettered access to all of that. The reason some of these earlier agreements failed is because there wasn't enough verification, there wasn't enough accountability, enough transparency. Hardly any inspectors. So, yeah, that's the danger. But this maybe can be resolved in the upcoming negotiations, I hope. The United States has to insist more than anything on verification and accountability and transparency and international inspectors to move around the country, North Korea, because they have a lot of hidden sites, underground sites.
What do you think we should do next, we being the United States, as far as human rights in North Korea are concerned? There apparently are still the gulags, still the camps, still the tortures, still everything else happening, unless maybe those things are changing as well.
Well, when we start talking to the North Koreans after they hopefully comply on nuclear issues and missile issues and make progress there, is we say to them, if you want American economic investment, technology assistance, if you want investments in your grid and infrastructure, we're going to have to talk about the treatment of your people, human rights. We're also, I think, need to help our Japanese friends deal with this abduction issue. And most importantly, family reunification issues between the North and South. That is very important.
Anything else you think is germane to this conversation that we haven't covered?
Well, I think it's very important that we continue our cooperation with China. China has to keep the pressure on the sanctions on. I was pleased with China's statement that they felt the summit was useful. We have to think of our allies. We have to make sure that those missiles don't hit Japan and South Korea. We have to thank the South Koreans, treat them better than we have, because they paved the way for this summit. And the South Koreans now, the first concession involves them, and they didn't even know about it. So we got to do better in the area of consulting our allies and diplomacy.
Our thanks to former Governor Bill Richardson for joining us today. Before departing Singapore, President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un agreed to hold follow-up negotiations. Coming up, investment in and by China. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia, the United States has opened a new state-of-the-art facility in Taiwan that serves as Washington's de facto embassy in the self-ruled island that Beijing claims is part of its territory. The opening of the new facility angered Beijing. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and other top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, China builds a new railroad in Africa, while outside investment flows into China's tech industry. These are the stories on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
The monthly passenger volume on the Djibouti Railway in eastern Africa has increased from 4,000 people to more than 12,000, a sign that China's ambitious infrastructure development project is having impact. The $4 billion railway line runs from Ethiopia's capital of Addis Ababa to its neighboring country, Djibouti. Nearly all of the financing was provided by Chinese banks. Many Chinese laborers spent years in Africa working on the project. Zhou Ping is the project manager of the China Railway No. 2 Group Company.
We spent 7 years on the Djibouti Railway construction project, and in fact, we cut through the whole line within 4 years. After it was put into commercial operation and maintenance, we had a great sense of accomplishment to see trains full of passengers and goods speeding along the railway built by us.
Ethiopia is a landlocked country that depends on Djibouti for 90% of its foreign trade. Since its old railway collapsed in 2009, the country's exports have had to travel by truck on dusty roads, a journey that took 7 days. Now that trip takes just 13 hours. The Djibouti Railway is part of China's Belt and Road Initiative, launched by President Xi Jinping in 2013. China plans to fund $1 trillion of infrastructure projects throughout Asia, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Other Chinese development projects on the continent of Africa include a $13 billion rail link between the Kenyan capital of Nairobi and Mombasa, and an ambitious rail modernization project in Nigeria. The first 4 months of 2018 saw rapid growth of foreign investment into China's high-tech manufacturing industries, which increased by over 79%. The growth was partly the result of China's agreement to lower investment barriers earlier this year. The action reassured investors who had been frustrated by regulations for a long time. Qin Hailin is the Director of Industrial Economy and World Industries at the CCID Group think tank.
By strengthening cooperation with developed economies such as the United States, EU, Japan, and South Korea, including the cooperation in the manufacturing sector, we'll be able to strengthen and speed up the high-quality development of our manufacturing industries.
For a long time, car makers have been required to link up with a local partner before building a factory in China. China now says it will remove foreign ownership caps completely for companies making fully electric and plug-in hybrid vehicles in 2018, for makers of commercial vehicles in 2020, and the wider car market by 2022. It will also scrap limits on foreign ownership in the shipbuilding and aircraft industries this year. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, former National Basketball Association player Dennis Rodman says he's happy to see a summit take place between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. In an interview with CNN, Rodman said he wants to see the two countries get along. Find all the interest and intrigue of today's stories online at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, everywhere in the world, babies cry, and as you know, they cry a lot. Every time they do, parents are trying to figure out why. But the guessing game may be over. A neuropsychologist from California has developed a smartphone app that translates babies' cries, making it easier for parents to understand their child's needs. VOA's Senya Turkova has more.
I mean, it could be she could have a wet diaper, she could be hungry, she could be tired, she could be bored.
Scott Williamson lists the many reasons why his five-month-old daughter Jalee could be crying. Like all new parents, he quickly learned that a baby can be upset about a number of things, but figuring out exactly why is not always easy.
It's always a checklist. You try your best. I think it's this, I think it's that.
But the frustrating guessing game may finally be over. UCLA neuropsychologist and mother of four, Dr. Ariana Anderson, has developed an app that helps parents decipher their baby's cries.
When I had my third baby, I realized that her cries were a lot very similar to the other two children. And I could recognize what she needed based on how her cry sounded.
The app is easy to use. A parent holds the phone near the crying baby and waits as the app listens and comes up with a possible explanation. For now, the program offers just three reasons for why a baby is crying: hunger, fussiness, and pain. But developers say that's just the start. The ultimate goal is to teach the app to recognize more emotions.
And you can go down and you can select another reason. So we have gassy, scared, separation anxiety, bored, sick, tired, all these other ones.
Anderson stresses that her app works not just for new parents. It can also help those who have hearing problems. It may also someday identify symptoms of autism and neurological disorders in babies. Ksenia Turkova for VOA News, Washington.
Necessity, they say, is the mother of invention, and like in many places around the world, Gaza needs electricity. The coastal enclave's 2 million residents now receive only 3 to 4 hours of power per day. So four university students invented a device that uses sea waves to generate electricity in a bid to solve the power shortage. VOA's Faith Lapidus has details.
The power of the ocean waves and tides is constant. For a group of engineering students from the Islamic University in Gaza, capturing that energy became the goal of their graduation project.
The idea started when we thought of how to generate electricity for the Gaza Strip, clean and renewable energy that can fill the deficit, even with small amounts.
But the tough living conditions in the Strip meant that some of the materials the students needed were not available locally.
We had to build some tools from scratch as an alternative solution for some tools that do not exist in the local market. We had to replace some tools with tools from other machines.
That has had an impact on the device's efficiency, but they can extract enough energy to power this rack of light bulbs.
The unit that we have now has a maximum energy of 10 kilowatts. The energy generated is connected to so many factors, the height of the sea waves and the efficiency of the project.
The next step for the team is to continue their research and their quest to bring more reliable power to the people of Gaza. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as streaming each day on Facebook at VOA Asia, and of course on our website at voanews.com. We'd also love to hear from you. You can write to us, send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. Let us know what's happening in your part of the world. We also like to thank everyone who is listening on the radio today. DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines Diliman in Quezon City. Thank you for tuning in. And our thanks go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Rob McClain, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.